Well, you wanted some real science? You're getting it now with Dr. Marvin Herndon as we talk about his work, Herndon's Earth and the Dark Side of Science. Welcome back with J. Marvin Herndon as we talk about some real science. Marvin, how did you, as a scientist, how did you get to go against the grain? How did that happen?
Well, this started back in really 1979. It's at the center of the Earth. There's an object that's about the size of the moon and about three times as massive, called the inner core. And I was doing research, and I was thinking about the Earth being like a meteorite, as people did. And I realized that the Earth wasn't like the kind of meteorite that people had been thinking for 40 years. And that the inner core might be something quite different than people had thought. They thought it was iron beginning to crystallize from the melt. And I published that in the Proceedings of the Royal Society of London, one of the most prestigious journals in the world. And it was communicated to that journal by Nobel laureate Harold C. Urey. And I ended up getting a very complimentary letter from the lady who discovered the inner core, Inga Lehmann. Well, while I was waiting for that to be published, I thought, well, you know, what's going to happen? There'll be debate, there'll be discussion. People that have the well-funded laboratories will probably take the idea and run with it and leave me in the dust. But that's not what happened. When it got published, it was as if it never was published at all. It was totally ignored. Then I found that my grants ran into trouble and weren't renewed for no good reason. I was essentially excommunicated from the scientific community.
Wow.
I had crossed a line. I didn't realize, I mean, science is all about finding out what's wrong with present thinking. And I didn't realize it, but that's not the way that science works in America. You challenge somebody's work and what the government funds, and you're in trouble. You're not part of it anymore. Well, I knew I was on to something, and I was well trained, so I kept progressing in science on more or less on a part-time basis, doing other things, consulting, for example, going into business, and it's been one discovery after another. And I publish them in world-class journals. So, I mean, it's solid science. And the geoscience community ignores me. They're trapped in this 1940s idea. And instead of making discoveries, they make computer models, computer programs based on assumptions, which are not discoveries at all. And so I became independent. I didn't have to go along with the crowd to get funding. And the only thing I had to do was to do good science and to tell the truth. And that's what I've done.
And it's worked. It's worked for you.
It's worked for me. It's not.
Doesn't work for everybody.
Well, it's not been easy because I've had to do it on my own nickel. I mean, most of the academicians, they get the publication fees paid for by grants. They get to travel, maybe to two places, one foreign trip a year to give papers, presentations. They get a lot of benefits from government grants that I don't get.
No, not at all. Not at all.
But I've had the opportunity to do real science. And I don't want to sound arrogant about this, George, but the geoscience community has not been able to refute any of my work.
What's going on with the magnetic pole shift?
We're getting back to the same thing. You asked the question, is the decompression changing?
Yeah.
What we started, George, we go back a long way, 2002.
Yes, we do.
And at the time, I received the call from Lisa Lyon because the August 2002 issue of Discover magazine featured my work as the cover story about a nuclear reactor at the center of the Earth. Now,
the core, right?
Inside of the core, inside of the inner core, at the very center of the Earth. And I, at the time, I thought that this was the energy source that powered whatever mechanism produced the magnetic field, the geomagnetic field. And after it was published, the word got out. And scientists all over the world started looking at it, and they confirmed my calculations. And so I was able to progress slowly, one step to another. And I mean, it was wonderful. I was contacted by the former head of the Indian Atomic Energy Commission, a man known as the father of India's atomic bomb. He contacted me a couple of times, and the second time he was going to visit his daughter in San Diego and wanted to meet with me. And we met, and it was an immense pleasure because it was like his mind was on fire. It was like new ideas and new thoughts, and it was something I really miss. And shortly after that conversation, I suddenly realized that there's a mechanism inside of the Earth to regulate the georeactor. And the georeactor not only serves for the purpose of producing heat, but it is also the device that produces the Earth's magnetic field. And the georeactor is small. It's 1/10,000,000th. The mass of the Earth's core.
But it's powerful.
It's powerful. But because it is so small, it doesn't have all the thermal inertia that the core of the Earth, which is about a third the mass of the Earth.
What would happen if it just stopped functioning?
We would be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, that's what
and
I thought.
This is one of the real concerns. There's another thing that happens is the georeactor interacts. Well, you know, the Earth's magnetic field is like the Earth's shield. It shields us from the onslaught of the solar wind, the charged particles from the sun. It deflects them around the Earth. And when the georeactor dies, the Earth's magnetic field will collapse, and those charged particles will stream into Earth. They'll we know a little bit about this because once in a while we have a major outburst from the sun that overwhelms the geomagnetic field and induces current, for example, in the power grid and takes out some transformers. This has happened before. If the Earth's magnetic field were to totally collapse, this onslaught of the solar wind would fry the electronics of satellites. It would generate huge amounts of uncontrolled currents in anything that's long in conducting, whether it's the electrical power grids or even pipelines or railroad tracks. And at sharp points, it could produce staggeringly high potential voltages and cause fires. And who knows the health effects? So, I mean, that's some of the things that the geoscience community should be focusing on is focusing on what's happening in the georeactor, because we know that the Earth's magnetic field is declining. We know that the magnetic North Pole is rapidly moving towards Siberia. That should be a high priority, But of course, the georeactor is not politically correct
no,
science.
Not at all. Let's take some calls here for you, Marv. They're lining up for you. We'll go to Pam in Spokane, Washington, to get things going. Pamela, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, I just want to say that you're
Boy, we're losing you. We're getting
you. I was just interesting. Anyways, as to the topic tonight, I'm in Spokane now, but I just moved up from down there in Riverside County area.
Yeah.
And exactly with the chemtrails, that's exactly the way we've been noticing. I lived right there between Palm Springs and Riverside for 11 years, and everybody there, you know, it was a topic amongst us all. And, you know, also of what they, you know, they could put anything in there, you know, and it seemed like different times, like possibly there was different effects happening, you know, on,
yeah.
You know, to people as...
You're right on.
Yeah.
You are right on, lady. That is very true. And let me make a comment here.
All right, go ahead, Marv.
The women, the female of the species, has traditionally, since the dawn of our species, protected her young and protected her newborn babies. And it's the women who really ought to be getting together and saying, whoa, stop this. It's not right. It's not right to do this.
Well, you still there, Marv? Lost him again, Tommy. So let's get him back on. He's disappeared into the ozone layer. He's having some difficulties with his phone. He just clicked right off. So we'll get him back, and we'll continue taking your calls here as we talk about his work. It's really great to have a real scientist on who's open-minded and who's got the ability to do what he's saying. I mean, how many scientists have been on this program who really talk about chemtrails? Nobody admits it. Nobody admits it at all. So we'll get him. Let's hope his phone is not kaput at all. I know a lot of you are on hold waiting for him. Not necessarily me. It's not open lines, but we may have to do that if we do end up losing him. Let me tell you about his website. It's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It is called nuclearplanet.com. His major work is called Herndon's Earth and the Dark Side of Science. His other one is called Mavericks, Earth, and Universe as well. And we've got him back. There you go. Boy, your phone keeps jumping you off, huh?
Well, you know, I wonder if there's not...
They're after you.
Well, I don't want to sound...
conspiratorial? Go ahead.
I don't want to sound conspiratorial, but I was... telling Pam something that I thought was very important.
So I'll let you say it again. Let's see if they get you again.
We're not going to make me sound like I'm paranoid now.
No, no.
Okay, shall I go ahead?
So where she's talking about how everything's dumped in there, but go ahead.
It could be all sorts of chemicals. And almost, well, you can't put chemicals in the air that are harmless. They are all going to harm people in one way or another. And the main chemical, which is aluminum, that's terrible. Also things like barium. Now, what I was saying to Pam is this. Traditionally, since the dawn of humanity and even before, the female of the species has protected her young with her life.
Yeah.
And what I'm hoping is that the women who see this happening will start talking to one another. You know, there are women's organizations that are not even listening, not even watching. Women need to take a stand and say, no, don't do this to our children. And, hey, don't do this to ourselves
sure.
either.
Well, everybody needs to take the stand. Everybody.
Everyone needs to take the stand and do that.
I mean, we have had people on, Marv, who have broken down the chemical complexity of these chemtrails, and there are things in there that we shouldn't be breathing.
Oh, a lot of them. And I'm telling you, I'm afraid to go outside, to be honest with you. I don't like to stay outside with all that stuff in the air, because it will be coming down.
Sure would. Let's go next to Jefferson City, Missouri, and Preston is with us. Preston, go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. Back in the 1990s, I was working with the Office of Naval Intelligence, and we were doing some research to help establish better communications with satellite.
Mm-hmm.
We were focused primarily on the upper atmospheric water vapor. Previously, there had been a lot of debate one way or the other about the water vapors actually existing at the stratospheric levels or higher. We established that they were. The problem we ran into was that the information we were getting from NOAA, the public information we got from them to do our research, messed everything up. After several months, we basically confronted NOAA and said, "What is wrong with your numbers?" Then they admitted that they were fudging the public numbers for political reasons, of course. I mean, they were mandated from the highest levels that the public numbers would not be accurate. What I've encountered, and I wanted to ask the doctor about this, is that with the other scientists in geosciences, and he discovered that, especially with this anthropomorphic global warming crowd, is it more of a religion with them than science? Because I know with us, you back everything up with something that can be repeated. You do your research. If it doesn't work, you find out why, and you do it again. And with them, it's blind acceptance of theory, and I see it more as a religion. I wanted his opinion on that.
All right, go ahead, Marv. We've got a minute and a half before the break.
Well, I will tell you that is absolutely true. And what's more, and this is the sad part, the government agencies ought to be being truthful with people, and they aren't. There's a big agenda. And so you can't trust what the government is saying in science. And that's frightening. And the government is not, you don't hear anything from Centers for Disease Control about the chemtrails. The government, this is part of the government. And it's a sad part. I really appreciate your bringing that point to bear, because that is right on. I appreciate that.
If you had to speculate, Marv, on just exactly what it is, weather manipulation, emotional control, what are they spraying on us?
Well, I think in one sense, it's for the military to control the weather. For another sense, it's the arrogance of the academians and the government that think that they can make weather better. And overall, I think that there are a lot of people that really believe this story about our planet is doomed by global warming, and we're going to save the planet by spraying this stuff.
Ah.
And I think that all of those things are taking place.
All right, well, hang with us, Marv. We're going to just put you on hold for a little bit, and then we'll come right back and take final phone calls. Well, all heck is breaking loose in France, about 25 miles from Paris. Looks like they might have those two suspects holed up somewhere in a factory. There are shots fired. They may have taken some hostages. Oh, they're really brave people, aren't they? And they are surrounded, heavy gunfire. I'll update you as the situations warrant. Our special guest here, of course, Dr. Marvin Herndon. We will take calls with him, final calls in a moment. And don't forget, I'm going to take one vacation day tomorrow and meet up with my son. So Richard Serra will be filling in for me. And we will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast, back with Dr. Marvin Herndon and final phone calls as well. So this attempt by you, at least to educate the public about all these things, did it almost crush your career, Marvin?
Can you repeat that? There was a...
Did it almost crush your career, the stance you've been taking over the years?
Well, in science, it's a strange thing. And on one hand, I have no career. On the other hand, people all over the world know about my work, and it's recognized. I even have a page in Wikipedia. So I'm sure that if if I had, I don't know if I had just done what everybody else does, I maybe
might have been the easier way out for you.
But it wouldn't be science. I wouldn't do that. That's the difference. So, but I'm actually right now, I'm very happy that there are a lot of people. And I want to tell you, Coast to Coast is a real big plus. You reach out to a lot of people.
We sure do. And they get this. They understand what you're talking about.
Let me make one point.
Sure.
I was in early 1950s. I lived on the coastal area of South Carolina. And every night I'd hear the sprayer and smell the stench of the DDT.
The mosquito sprayer.
Or the mosquito spraying. And, you know, all that sort of was brought to a halt by one woman, Rachel Carson, who wrote Silent Spring in 1962. And I'd like to tell you a brief quote from that. "Then a strange blight crept over the area, and everything began to change. Some evil spell had settled on the community. Everywhere was a shadow of death." Well, you could say this right now about the sprays that are being sprayed over populated areas.
Well, heck, they sprayed people over St. Louis, denied it. They sprayed Navy sailors testing it over a ship. They denied it. And I fully expect them to deny this, too.
Oh, they will deny everything. But, you know, you reach out to people, and that's one thing. We just talked about women that like to reach out to people who are of a religious conscience. I mean, this is horrific. I mean, this is... you know, one of the Ten Commandments is thou shalt not kill. And believe me, this stuff is killing.
It is. Let's take some final calls. Simi in Southern Pines, North Carolina. Hi, Simi. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing. Anytime.
I found this very interesting, and I've heard your guest before, the doctor, and both times I've had to disagree with you.
Mm-hmm.
My own beliefs are in deep ecology and the Gaian theories, and I'm really dismayed by how you're portraying the scientific community and the majority of the scientific community in all of their publications and all of their research that shows that the planet is in trouble, and that when you say global warming, that doesn't mean that the whole planet is warming. There's always different temperatures, and it's just really the weather's become unstable, and it's going to continue to be unstable, and it's not only through all of the pollution that has come from the industrial age, it's also from paving over the planet and destroying habitats.
Yeah, but don't forget the Earth cycle too, Simi. I mean, this planet is changing. The solar system's changing. Other planets are getting hotter. That's weird all by itself.
And yes, and I'll also say that science is changing. Science is always changing as new information comes in. And in just last year, the latest information about the planet and the core of the planet is that there's an inner ocean. And so, I mean, that is something that really hasn't been talked about, and I'd love it if George got a scientist on that would talk about this discovery and all of the evidence.
Go ahead, Marv.
May I interrupt you and make a comment this inner ocean? Okay, the term inner ocean, this was hype to get public attention. What it referred to is that certain minerals have water in their crystal structure. There's no ocean inside of the Earth. There's rock. And that is a gross misnomer. Now, it's not to say that some of that water might be expelled through volcanoes or something as the rock is melted. But the whole idea that there is an inner ocean is hype to get people who don't know interested. And I think that's wrong in science. I think people in science should tell the truth.
Well, they should, but they're not, obviously.
Obviously.
Simi, thanks for your call. Let's go to Stefan in Grand Rapids, Michigan, east of the Rockies. Hi, Stefan. Go ahead.
Hi, good day, George. Thanks a lot for taking my call. I really appreciate it. And thank
sure.
you. I got a big question about it. It's very chilly down here, and now they call it the polar vortex. So did they make this up within the last 2 years, or is it just this year it's so cold now?
It's the hip thing. It's the hip thing to say right now, isn't it, Marvin? The polar vortex sounds great, doesn't it?
Well, it sounds great, but there was a piece I referred to earlier in the Huffington Post by the dean of Duke University's Environmental Sciences School that describes a secret, a highly redacted copy of a government document that he received about spraying nanoparticles from commercial jets that caused the jet stream to shift and resulted in the very severe winter on the East Coast and the drought in California. And I think that's real. I don't think that's a nonsense report, and it may not be the smoking gun, but it's the directions of where to find the smoking gun that has Obama's fingerprints on it.
Explain that, Marv.
Well, the Obama was, and this is something that you probably want to look at in more detail. Later at a meeting, this was sometime after he had made that remark that I quoted earlier, with a national security team, he said, quote, "Call me the Rainmaker." That was alluding to the plan's code name that allegedly used the jetliners to alter the winter weather. And so, I mean, this is being done, but I have no doubt that it's being done all over for different reasons, with different agendas. A lot of it's military, but a lot of the spraying is to protect the planet, to keep it to change, to reverse the effects of anthropomorphic, human-caused global warming, which is not correct.
I remember during the Olympics in China, they were asked once about their weather conditions, and they said, "Don't worry about the weather. We can handle that."
Yes, that is true.
That.
I think that was 2008. They said that...
They control the weather.
That they control the weather, yes. And this is happening all over. But you know, suppose for sake of argument that none of the chemicals or whatever is done had any negative effects on people or the environment, which is a false assumption.
Sure.
From the start.
We've got all kinds of respiratory illnesses and stuff.
Exactly, but changing the weather changes the historic patterns of weather and agriculture has evolved to make use of these stable patterns. So what happens when you change the weather in California and make it a drought all the time? Well, the farmers go out of business. And, you know, a lot of the vegetables that people on the East Coast eat come from California, the fruits. So, I mean, it has negative effects all over, economic, with respect to our food supply. I mean, there is nothing good, and people are not that clever to alter the weather without having deleterious side effects. I mean, people just simply are not that smart.
Final calls here, William in Middleton, Wisconsin. Hey, William, go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. As a PhD chemist, Indiana University in 1960s, I sent paper to journal Nature on my hypothesis of how mutation occurs in DNA and via RNA produces binding sites in immune globulins to fight bacteria, viruses, cancers, etc. It was rejected by a peer reviewer who gave reasons that I did not have his name among my 70 references. A few years later,
that's the mistake you made.
And with some, got a Nobel Prize.
He took it?
I wrote, but he got the Nobel Prize. Whoa. And as you know, 2 years ago, a Nobel Prize winner stated in print that people with a good hypothesis should send their papers on hypotheses to a less recognized journal and thus get it published to avoid theft.
Yeah, and that's happening now.
In my case, perhaps God or a power gave me freedom to go to Baltic nations and Finland in 1960s and 70s when they were under Russian thumb. I helped Poland, East Germany, Finland, the Baltic countries get free of Russian thumbs. They placed me in jail for a little while to see if I was a secret agent. They found I was only in Finnish Karelia to find my ancestors who had sadly been shot by Russians. So they let me free if I agreed to say nothing. Now I agree to say something, agree with you, that there is some theft, corruption in science, sadly.
Oh, and I'll have to tell you, it is progressively worse. It used to be when you submitted a paper to a scientific journal, the editor would send it out for reviews. There were corrupt reviewers and occasionally corrupt editors who would pretend to be reviewers so they could have a basis for rejecting a paper, but at least you had a chance of publishing. What has happened now increasingly in the West, the editors of journals, these are the major journals from the Nature Company, from Elsevier, from Springer, from Copernicus. The editors are given the freedom to reject papers without review. I've now published largely in a paper called Current Science, which has been which was started in 1932 by the Indian Academy of Sciences, and they still maintain integrity. And they still have outstanding referees. And it's I'm just immensely grateful because you don't get this. The science has been so badly corrupted. I'll give you one example. There was a fairly new Elsevier journal. They weren't backed up with papers, calling for papers. I wrote the first review article about the nuclear georeactor, and it was a substantial article, and I submitted it to that journal. The editor handling it rejected that without review. The editor handling it was a professor of geology. In England, at the University of Oxford, one of the premier universities. Well, I submitted it to Current Science. I got excellent reviews, and the reviewers even suggested some things I should add and to make it even better. And it was published.
Well, in the West, that's a big step.
We've gotten to the point that science is so totally controlled, and it's controlled by people who are not well-versed. They just keep with the politically correct line, and that's a problem. I really appreciate hearing your story.
Let's take maybe one more call. We will go to Barbara in San Diego. Go ahead, Barb.
Hi, Dr. Herndon and George. I really appreciate the guts that you have to put people like him on the radio and for you to bring up
subjects like this. It's amazing to all of us out here listening.
We're tough here at Coast to Coast.
Well, I got to senior level in geophysics at a university, and I've become an actual organic farmer here in San Diego County. Couple things, and then I'll have two questions real quick.
Okay, Barb, I just have a minute left before I go off the air, so do the best you can. Go ahead.
Okay, number one, Dr. Herndon, do you think geoengineering is part of the screen to keep radiation from Fukushima away from Southern California so it won't rain on us? Number two, do you think global warming may also be caused by Nibiru coming in?
The first one, I've never heard that. I've never thought about that.
They've been spraying long before Fukushima.
And what was the
second one was this talk about this Planet X called Nibiru.
Oh, I don't think that has anything to do with it.
All right. Marv, we are out of time. The book's still available all over the place, I trust.
Yes, indeed. And thank you for letting everybody know.
You got it. And your website, of course, linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Quick update, Manhunt testifies. They have closed down part of the Charles de Gaulle Airport because it's too close to the situation where these two people are. They're surrounded. They have a woman hostage. We'll see what happens. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Napinart Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.